Gotcha.
Yes,
Marissa, we seem not to be able to open the lens much wider than this, but you can
okay,
see it's
that's
Tutu Kalani.
That's fine, you can see, I think,
about six members now.
Yeah. And if I could introduce, standing over his shoulder, if you don't mind, is Mr. Tutu Kalani. He's the chairman of the Select Committee on Finance, and he has a lot of the members with him. And I think it's over to the chair.
Okay, can I introduce them all? Immediately on my left is Mr. Sokoni from Gauteng. Then Madam Kunu from KZN. Then Mr. Bota from Limpopo. Followed by Madam Robinson from the Western Cape. On my right is Mr. Robertson from Robinson is from the Western Cape.
Yeah.
You said that.
No, you did say that.
Oh, I thought so. I thought I said Eastern Cape.
Yeah.
And then Mr. Robertson from the Eastern Cape. Joining us now is Mr. Kolweni from the Platinum Province, Northwest. We are accompanied by the drafter of the bill, Advocate Jenkins from Parliament. And then there's also Zolani Grando from the committee. And then there's a very tall lady. If she can just come behind me so that you see her. She's from the PMG. She's not a kid who has absconded from school. She's at work. And thank you for this opportunity and responding. Speedily as you did, I mean, it was a very tight schedule, short notice. And we thank you for this opportunity. We've never had a video conference before. I'm not sure about my colleagues, myself. I've never had this video conference. Essentially, the purpose here is just to take us through your submission, explain exactly what your comments mean. For instance, under Section 3, norms and standards, there are those things. Because these members, all of us, will be briefing provinces starting on Thursday and Friday.
Are you good?
Over to you. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much. Just a quick recap on where we're coming from. You will recall that the first instance when we provided comments to the bill was in September. And those comments were sent to Advocate Jenkins, and we ultimately received comments back from him, and that resulted in our memo with all our comments on the 30th of October last year. Now, you will recall on the 4th of December when we met with you in Cape Town, the Auditor General's approach was to stick to exactly the same comments that we had before. So our managers and our leaders have not changed their views on this on the bill at all. So, of course, it's from the auditing background. I'm a legal advisor, so for me it's a little bit difficult to go into the nitty-gritty of the financial aspects of it. But I think I can take you through the comments that we had. Unfortunately, for Kush, I didn't have time to prepare for this meeting, so you must apologize. We apologize already for doing it a little bit slow. But I think when it comes to Section 3, do you have the memo that we sent Advocate Jenkins? Do you still have it with you? Okay, do all the members have it? Okay. Section 3 of the bill deals with the norms and standards for provincial legislatures. The Auditor General does not have a specific view, like, for example, the National Treasury, that the PFMI should be the piece of legislation that accommodates for the financial management of Parliament. We don't have a very strict view in that regard. All that we say is that this bill appears to be applicable to Parliament, the National Parliament only. We did see the broad norms and standards that you provided for in Schedule 1 to the bill, also not a problem. It's just when it comes to the alignment processes with the provinces, when they enact their own pieces of legislation for the purpose of financial management of their particular legislature, that there must be a very consistent process throughout the whole process. So it's not that the Auditor General objects to the way it's been dealt with here. It's just a word of caution to say, be aware that when there is enactment of legislation on provincial level, make sure that there, in the first place, there's no contravention with the national legislation and that it is very clear and streamlined through the whole country. I don't know, do you want to comment on that while we're talking this section, Beth?
Members,
or ask your questions now?
Members, any questions, comments?
Yeah.
You see, the big issue there in the context of that schedule could be the regulation, especially at the level of provinces. You might find that there would be inconsistencies there, and I think that's the big issue. And so, the issue that therefore you are raising, it is unclear how parity with this bill will be obtained on a provincial level, I think is the big issue at the level of regulation and so on and so on. I think that's the issue that we must deal with in the context of the province. Okay.
Yes, that's 100% correct. 100%.
Proceed then to 5.
Section 5, that deals with the executive authority. We noticed that the executive authority of Parliament is vested in the Speaker of the National Assembly as well as the Chairperson of the NCOP. Once again, we do not object from an Auditor General point of view. It is just very unsure how they can make sure that there is proper accountability when you have two people being accountable for the same thing. And that's just also a word of caution, although this is clearly a parliamentary crisis issue, we just wanted to make the committee aware that there may be accountability problems when it comes to the implementation and keeping these two officials or all members accountable for the financial performance of Parliament.
Correct. Any comment again?
Yeah.
Yes, Mr. Sobhani.
Okay. Is the Office of the Auditor General not satisfied that there is something called the POA, which is the Parliamentary Oversight Authority, of course it's chaired by these two people. Is it not perhaps sufficient to deal with that, with this concern that is raised by the AG?
No, but then the big issue, once you've got your POA, the big issue here is you are dealing with individuals. Now, anything is possible with individuals. And I think your concern is right in that context. How do we deal with people? Well, how do we then deal with people that account jointly? When tomorrow somebody might wake up on the wrong side of the bed and the other, those kinds of things, how do we deal with that? Do you have an idea? Do you have an idea of how we can deal with this matter?
Chief.
Just before that, another question, Mr. Botha.
You see, Chief, the Speaker of Parliament and the Chairperson of the NCOP is actually the political accountability people. Because the Secretary of Parliament is the financial accountability for that, the Speaker of Parliament. But politically, there's two people who are accountable, the Speaker of Parliament and the Chairperson of the NCOP.
No, but still, the issue is that the executive authority of Parliament are joined.
Yeah.
And that's the big issue we're talking about. Prakash?
Yes, Chair. I'm familiar with dealing with the PSMA, which has the accounting officer and the executive authority. The executive authority, we understand, is the still head of a department. We would just need some accountability arrangement that would define the roles and responsibilities of how the joint accounting or executive authority arrangements will be managed in terms of the also in terms of our reporting arrangements, on our findings. That's what we need.
The drafter has just worked out because I also wanted him to just to come in there so that from the point of view of drafting and conceptually, they would then be able to say to us exactly how do they foresee this happening. But he's still on his phone.
Okay.
Mr. Jenkins, just from the point of view of your drafting and your own mandate, how did you envisage this being done jointly?
Thank you, Chair. First of all, I must say the Public Finance Management Act itself foresees the political head of parliament as both the speaker and the chairperson of the NCOP. So that's coming from 1999. So I'd like to ask the Auditor General whether there were any problems since then with this joint accountability, because that's set out in Section 3, I think, of the PFMA. The other part is that we do have a bicameral parliament, and compared to other constitutions like Switzerland, I can recall, there is no specific speaker. There's a speaker of the National Assembly. There's not a head of parliament. I think in Switzerland you have a president of your parliament. So we do have parity between the presiding officers, and at the moment in terms of the constitution, you have to have a shared responsibility there. Whether that responsibility will be equal, for instance, if there's a problem with the accounting in the NCOP, whether the speaker will be forced to answer it, I don't think that is the intention. I don't think that will happen, because we also have one accounting officer for the two houses. So you have a certain amount of sharing, and then you also have a certain amount of expenses that will pertain to a house. But as far as I'm aware, there have been no problems up to this point. So I cannot see why there would be problems in the future with this. I stand to be corrected if I'm wrong. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, our response is yes, we agree that there have been no problems in the past with the present arrangement as the CFMA. So if this matter is, if the new bill is a continuation of the past accountability arrangement, then we have no objection.
Okay, let's proceed to 7C.
Chair, on 7C, it's merely an administrative matter regarding our audit of the National Assembly and the NCOP and other government departments as well. We have a report on performance information of which we would like included in the responsibilities of the accounting officer, because then it would allow us to hold the accounting officer responsible in terms of our audit of performance information. It's actually an advancement on the PFMA, and if you look at the current audit report for the National Assembly, you will see that we do report on performance information. In the future, from next year's audit, we will be providing an audit opinion on performance information. So I think it would be useful to have that in the rules of the bill.
All right. Any comments this side?
Can I?
Is that an addition?
Can I just, in addition to that, say that that is something we, Advocate Jenkins also commented on, and he said that basically that they would change their wording to provide for performance information. I don't think this is in split between the AG and the legal advisor that you've got. I don't think so. Advocate Jenkins, maybe you can just clarify if I understand it incorrectly.
Okay, just before that, any comments? None, Advocate?
No, I didn't quite get the reference. Which document are you quoting from that where I commented on?
the AG's proposal? Okay. Was that 20 October? Or was it before 20 October?
I've got one. No, it's all set. It's actually an internal memo dated 30 October where one of my legal advisors attended the first session. And one of your comments in the session was that you've changed the comments to read as a system that will ensure accurate and relevant performance information is also important to support the audit of performance information, which forms part of the audit. And it is provided for in sections 14 and 15. I don't think that was the feedback that I got from the previous session or the session in October. What's your comment?
Okay, you see, he seems not, but I'm sure he's going to remember. He's just going through his documents for now. When he's ready, he's going to tell me, he's going to show me by hand.
Yeah, no, there is such a provision in clause 14, which pertains to the strategic plan, 14.2e. So I think my comment there was that that information has been included. I understand that the development of the audits of government departments, et cetera, is now moving in the direction of including performance management indicators.
Mm.
And then the Auditor General gives an opinion on those indicators, whether they are measurable and whether they can actually, when they're attainable. And in my opinion, that is included in the bill. That our strategic plan must set that out. And then, of course, it can be audited from that perspective. So I'm not sure whether there's any need for further provisions in the bill. The issue of Clause 7, if I may be allowed, it's not included in 7C. But it is part of the strategic plan. So whether one wants to put that under the heading of the general financial management functions of the accounting officer, whether or not included in the strategic plan, is one of the things one can discuss. Where is it in? But it is at the moment, it's there.
Yes, if I can comment on that, I fully agree with what Advocate Jenkins said. It is there, it is provided for in 14 as part of the strategic management board. But we thought that the prominence of auditor performance information is so strong that we would recommend to maybe cater for it under 7 as well. But that is still something that we recommend. It is up to the committee to decide whether they would like to have it there or not.
Okay. Look, it would be nice also to have a clear submission from yourself on this one. Okay? But it's fine. Let's go to 23. Treatment of unspent funds.
Yes, Chair. On the treatment of unspent funds, we have no objection to the retention of funds as proposed in the bill. It will impact on our audit in minor ways, and we will have to then, obviously, accounting system will have to account for retained income unspent income in the form of a reserve. But again, there's no objection from the Auditor General in respect of unspent funds.
No, there should be a big issue there. Let me just allow members to raise one or two things there.
You see, Chen, in terms of the, we're moving away from PFMA, but the division of revenue, I hope that Parliament will still fall under the division of revenue. I'm not sure. But again, over the years, there has been a clause that provides that if funds are unspent, there should be application for those articles, for those unspent funds. Now, that are some comment, but also I wanted to raise a question that says, if the Auditor General's office see it as a minor hitch-up, does that mean that it may not lead to a qualification, for instance? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. To you, if we look at Parliament, it is a sphere of government. Now, if we're going to allow, as you say, minor audit implications for unspent funds, isn't that going to set the precedent for any other department?
The big issue is unspent money is underspent money. In other words, what we're doing here is to legislate that Parliament has underspent money. And that would be tantamount to poor planning, misalignment, etc., etc. But then what moral grounds would Parliament have for underspending departments when they themselves have legislated that they must keep and spend money? I mean, for instance, if you look at the FFC Act, the FFC is not allowed to overspend. And in this case, we're saying Parliament must underspend. But part of the bigger issue is that you're also allowing for budget games, if you like. Overstated budget such that there remains unspent money. And so it means there's misalignment in terms of the business plans and so on and so on and so on. And so this is why we think the Auditor General really should be worried about this one. Shouldn't be a minor audit issue. Mr. Porter?
Chair, yes. you raised the issue of underspending or overspending. The issue of departments, and we not say Parliament is a part of department, but it's a part of the budget. And if Parliament underspent, and there's no reason given for that, and to keep the money back, why there's a problem with the budgeting or business plans. And what is the reason? And I would like, perhaps you can't answer the reason, but what is the reason for Parliament to retain that money in their bank account and not giving it back? Because the new year budget, there also be a plan and a business plan for the new year. So I can't see that will create a problem this year. They will underspend with 10 million, 20 million, and they keep the money. Next year, perhaps they underspend with 40 million, they keep the money. So they allocated the money is going over accumulated in bank accounts. And what is the reason for them to keep it? So if you're going further on, and province level, they can also say it in legislature, money would not be returned. So we keep money in the bank account for this year and next year and the following year. And that can create a problem, I think, for oversight, and I don't know if it can also create a big problem for auditing in regarding of that process, because every year that bank account will show a surplus, the following year surplus, and interest is going on to that. And what happens with the interest and all that type of issues, this issue is what we have to be right.
Colony?
Yeah, maybe if that statement on 23.2, where it says funds appropriated for but not spent in particular must be regarded as funds derived from Parliament's own revenue sources, if there could be a merit for that statement with me.
No, proceed.
If there could be a merit for that statement with me, maybe it can clear the air in a way.
But still they don't have revenue. It comes back to the same thing of underspending. And so it should not be made some own revenue. But proceed with your responses.
I just make one comment in this regard, and I think we should separate the legal and the practical implication of this provision from the audit implication of this provision. On the legal side, I think what is very important is that we recognize why we are uncomfortable with this provision. And what I'm getting from the committee members is that they are worried about two things. The first one is Parliament prescribes certain requirements to departments, for example. They can't return any funds, they must pay back into the revenue fund. That's the first thing. Why would Parliament then be treated differently? Because they are there to set an example. Then secondly, if Parliament retains a lot of money without bureaucracy, what does it mean? It means underspending of budgeting funds, which may mean under delivery on what they're supposed to do. Aren't we here talking about policy issues there? Let's deal with that thing and separate issues from the audit implications that it may have. And I might even also mention an example. The Auditor General is also not the Auditor General can return unspent funds at the end of the financial year. But there is a very rigorous process that must be followed to get approval from the National Treasury to return the funds and from the Standing Committee for Auditor General in Parliament. And I don't see that, maybe Advocate Jenkins, I'm missing it somewhere, but I don't see that kind of a strict process applicable to the retention of funds. Maybe that might serve as a compromise, I'm not sure. But if the committee feels uncomfortable about the principle or the policy decisions to retain funds in Parliament, I think it must be addressed at that level. Trying to confuse it with the auditing discussion.
No, it's fine, look. There is, they say, an agreement between Parliament and National Treasury to keep that. That's something that we still have to deal with. Because I think a week ago I did speak to the chairperson of the NCOP, who also agrees with us that this is wrong. But then there's this agreement that they've been having all the time. It's something that we've got to deal with. But it's fine. I think it's not a big deal. It's a matter that we will be able to resolve. 31.2b, revenue management.
Again, Chair, that's an administrative issue regarding the timing that money received and the timing that it is deposited into your bank account. We would recommend that the time frames are aligned to 31.2e, which requires at least a weekly reconciliation. So we would also recommend a weekly deposit of all money received into the bank account. Because the word promptly may be interpreted in many ways.
Mm. So there's no hazards with that one, is there any?
Mm-hmm.
No. 34.3G, regulations on support.
Okay, Chair, on this one, our colleague was just to say that it is important to require political parties to submit their audited financial statements within a specific time frame. Now, that is, for one reason, it has practical implications on the auditing side. And then secondly, once again, like the retention of funds, we set the benchmark for all the departments on provincial and local and national level to submit within a specific time frame for the Auditor General to audit in time and to report in time. So what would be different then for the auditors on the political parties? I think from our side, it was just, you know, to make it much more practical and the specific a time frame for the peers within that have to submit their audited financial statements.
Any comments?
Not really.
No, the intention there is to put it in regulations.
Yeah.
That's
fine. So, and then there's the stick, if I can call it that, compared to the carrot. To say if the party doesn't stay within those time frames, then the money will be suspended. And that is the present practice at the moment. I'm not sure if it sounds like the Auditor General wants to put more in the legislation rather than the regulations. I'm not sure if I'm understanding you correctly on that point. But there are regulations at this point in time for this. Yeah.
Okay.
If the regulations specify, you know, a certain time frame, then the Auditor General will certainly be comfortable with that time frame.
Okay. 39. Okay.
Here, the provisions for supply chain management in 39-46, I think it's probably one of the most contentious issues in this book.
Yeah.
And I think we must be honest and clear about what is at the root of this concern. And that is, you know, when we apply international standards and auditing to the work that we do, and if you want to apply the international standards and auditing in terms of that's number 800, then we need full disclosure of information in respect of related party transactions. Now, our concern is, and I think that is what happened now in the previous audit, is in terms of the member's interest register that was not made available to the auditor general. Now, for us, that is a big concern because it might lead to an limitation of scope, which means that here in Zakash can help me, that you can't really express a complete audit opinion. Now, there is a legal, there is a concern in the sense of legal interpretation. It was the Public Audit Act says clearly in Section 15 that the Auditor General has unrestricted access to any information that can elucidate the business of its auditees. Whereas the argument from Parliament's side is that this member's register is confidential and it's not going to be made available for auditing purposes. I think that is a real issue here. Of course, I don't know if you want to add on the accounting issue there.
No, I would agree with that and support
Marissa.
Hmm.
That's a big one. You are
right. Yeah.
Even yesterday we had a long discussion on this one. Because the Secretary of Parliament also raises issues of implementation on this one. And it is a bit sticky. And I think all of us need to apply our minds very, very clearly on this one as we deal with this one. Comments, clarities, members?
Nothing.
Sir President, we think that as members, generally, this is not the first time that this requirement is there. If you go to, MFMA, it is very clear, the regulations, they make this requirement. And we don't think that for Parliament it should be different. Because we think that it is important to ensure that there is transparency in terms of procurement, you know, issues of supply chain management in Parliament. Thank you.
In fact, that will help us to maintain our integrity. Otherwise, if we cannot be seen to be people of integrity and honesty, then it will be a sad day for South Africa.
Right. Advocate Jungle.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I just got a question for the Auditor General. When one looks at Clause 46, there's a prohibition of people that Parliament may do business with, in short. Now, we have a member of Parliament, member of the Provincial Legislature, Municipal Councillor. That's an absolute prohibition. Okay, so when we get to 46E, it would read that if we're doing business with an entity, we cannot do business with that entity if a member of Parliament or any of the other persons is a director or controlling a substantial interest. But that information one will get from the Registrar of Companies. I'm not sure how access to the confidential part or the general part. I mean, there's a general part of the members' register. That's open. Then there's a confidential part. And those are the issues that members' spouses and family members have disclosed certain facts. Now, I'm not sure how the two relate to each other. I mean, if you have a spouse that has a controlling stake in an entity, to be quite straightforward, it doesn't look like the intention is to prohibit them from doing business with Parliament. So what would the Auditor General want with that, the confidential part of the members' register? If it's not actually going to be to ascertain whether we have complied with Section 46, if my assumptions are correct.
Mm, that's a good question. Merci, madame.
Chair, a normal part of the audit, you know, is the audit of supply chain management and the and what we call the audit of related parties. Okay, our intention as auditors is to audit from both sides, both from the side of the auditee, which in this case will be National Assembly and the NCOP, and then also look at the businesses and the persons who are doing business with the client. Okay, so it's a two-way test. And yes, we do have access to the information from SUTRA, which is the database of all companies and close corporations. It would be useful, and it would not be seen as a limitation to have access to what the members of parliament are disclosing, and for that then to validate our audit findings.
Hmm. All right. I think that's all. And thank you very much for your quick responses and your good and clear responses to the question. Clearly, we shall do better work then in terms of creating our own provinces tomorrow. Do thank the Auditor General on our behalf for having arranged, because the members were saying this must be as urgent as before, Thursday and Friday. And so we really thank you very much for this kind of arrangement, and really for having put us on technology for the first time. And it's a good thing. Clearly, I could also speak one-on-one to President Obama now. Across the world.
Yeah.
Now, later. Now, what we want to do, therefore, is to thank you again, and I do want to ask you then to switch off now. And we are going to be walking over to lunch. You're not invited to our lunch, unfortunately.
Technology for
okay, thank you very much.
And then I will then ask the members of the ANC for 2 minutes.
No, that's
only
to everyone.
Oh, Mr. Sokoni wants to talk to every member of the committee before that. Mr. Jennings, thank you very much.
Thank
we'll
you.
Talk to you again when we're dealing with
you.
No.
Yes.
You can go to London and come in.